WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. What happens when you bring LGBTQ plus elders and young adults together to swap stories? Turns out they build relationship and make art together. That's the goal of the LGBTQ plus Intergenerational Dialogue Project, a Chicago-based initiative that's been fostering cross-generational connection and creativity since 2019. Through regular conversations, sharing meals, and creative collaborations, the project bridges generational divides in the LGBTQ plus community. It can also preserve invaluable histories that often go untold. We spoke to Karen Morris, one of the project's co-founders, and a cultural anthropologist professor at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Also with us to discuss, we had two participants, Holly Davis and Joni Pepper Goliath, who've experienced firsthand the power of this project. Karen kicked us off with the story of how this intergenerational project began.
I had been teaching at SAIC, School of the Art Institute of Chicago, for probably 15 years at that point. And something that I had noticed is that most of my students, including my LGBTQ students, didn't know that older LGBTQ adults existed at all. They thought they either died during the AIDS crisis, all of them, or something. So they didn't even know it was possible. And I found that a lot of them actually didn't see themselves living past 40. And so a colleague of mine, who's the co-founder of the Dialogue Project, Adam Gredeman, was working at the time with elders at Center on Addison. Center on Addison is Center on Halsted's Aging with Pride program for older LGBTQ adults. And Adam has really noticed, besides teaching students that didn't know elders existed, noticed that a lot of the LGBTQ elders who came through the Center on Addison felt very isolated and left out and forgotten by the communities, the LGBT communities they helped to create. So we had an idea to just try something. Like, what would happen if we somehow are able to get together younger and older LGBTQ adults? And then I say, basically get them together, feed them, water them, and get out of the way and just see what happens.
Right. Now, Joni, you're a graduate of the School of the Art Institute,
Chicago? Yeah, I just graduated with my MFA like a few weeks ago.
Well, congratulations. So tell us, what made you want to sign up for this course and project?
I think kind of speaking to what Karen was talking about the lack of this type of program, I think I had never heard of a situation in which I could meet an LGBT elder. Like, I had never I think it was just the idea of that by itself was really, really incredible and like exciting. I think like as someone who, I think for me only, I only know like younger queer people. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of meeting, I guess, like people who were like me that were older was really exciting, because it was like I couldn't really imagine myself older, I guess, if that makes sense. So it was like a really beautiful
thing. Stories that you've heard and been told, does it help to know that there are struggles in the past and now they're maybe helping you with struggles today?
Yeah, no, I think it made me realize that a lot of the struggles that a lot of the elders went through are very similar to ones that I do and my friends do, and how much similarities there were between us. That was kind of the biggest thing for me, was realizing that we're actually like very, very similar, even like emotionally, especially, even if the circumstances are different. And for me, I like really felt like connected to the elders especially, and felt like I saw myself in them a lot, and it was really beautiful for me.
Who has the better music, older generation or now?
I think older, probably, to be honest.
Well, Holly Davis, what does having connections intergenerationally mean to you?
It means the world to me, especially now that it's over. I'm happy to be sitting right here next to my adopted son slash extraordinaire director of our projects. It's just been awesome. You know, it's just been an awesome experience. So,
well, Karen, what impact have you seen the project have on participants, both on the elders and the younger folks?
I think it's been transformational. So actually in the second year of the project, we also added a research component because of what we were seeing. And what this project is really unique. There's nothing really like it at the moment. There are often, one thing my collaborators and I wanted to do was do something that was sustained over time rather than a one-off. So a lot of intergenerational LGBTQ, if there are events, are like a one-time thing. We wanted relationships to grow. And so people commit to 9 months of biweekly meetings and working together and eating together. So we added a research component because we're all academics in different fields to kind of start to document what was happening, because we saw many, many people over the course of 9 months and would often share with us how affirming it was, how their own sense of identity and understanding of community and belonging changed. And I think it really also has really empowered our community. I mean, the idea is to bring very vulnerable members of our communities, especially older adults, older LGBTQ adults and our youth, together to build on their strengths together. So I think for our community, we also try not to just cross age barriers within our community, but we're really crossing barriers, divides within the community along lines of race and class and geography in Chicago.
Why is the food component important?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because for a long time we've done this on a shoestring budget. So the folks that lead the project have their own full-time jobs and we're doing this in our free time and with little money often. And so, you know, in the second year I said to Adam, my co-collaborator, that why don't we not have the food, because that's where our expense is. And he's just kept saying the food is important. And then I really learned that over the time. We have dialogue in different ways. So we have formal like theme dialogues, but we also dialogue through storytelling, through art making. And another major way we dialogue is through sharing food together. And conversations happen over food that won't happen elsewhere. But also, as we know, food for many people is really brings in all sorts of senses of family, community, belonging. And for LGBTQ people, the family meal table may be really something that's very complicated. So we found over time that a lot of people will tell us later one of their favorite parts of every meeting was sharing meals with each other.
Well, it's sort of that art of breaking bread,
yeah.
And you just feel more of a connection, mm-hmm. and it's easier to do it on a full belly, right?
Absolutely.
So Joni and Holly, what was it like when you two first met? We'll start off with Holly.
Magic. It was magic. One thing I like about Johnny is that he asked me questions about myself. I mean, many people, I suppose they do, but it's very rare that he literally does an interview with you. Holly, how do you feel about that? And then once I say something, he'll extend it. Then why did you feel that way? And I thought that was pretty interesting that he cared enough about me to think about what I might be feeling or thinking about a subject. That's one of the things I loved about you, other than you're just wonderful.
I gotta say, Holly, you've got a magical smile.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a smile with a jack-o'-lantern smile.
Well, Joni, for you, what was it like meeting Holly for the first time?
I think it was really, surprising. I think the connection that we had was like very distinct very quickly. I think it's very emotional and like strong. And I think like Holly is someone who I hold with a lot of high esteem because aww. I view her as like a really huge light
aww.
In my life. And so it was like, I think this thing where she's talking about how I ask her questions, it's kind of just, she's an interesting person and I want to get to know her better. So I asked, you know, so I don't know. Yeah. Like I think, kind of with Holly and the other elders that I got close to in the program, it was like I really felt connected in a very deep way where I felt like I really both saw myself and my friends and other people in everyone. And it was a very like transformative experience for me because I felt very like I felt kind of, I don't know, it felt it kind of gave this feeling of like of completeness to the way that I view the community, I guess. And it was just really beautiful for me.
So Karen, since this is now part of a full-on course curriculum at the School of the Art Institute, tell us how that works in connection to the project.
Sure. So the project really began as just this experiment, right, that had nothing to do with school or anything. And I think it became clear pretty quickly that it really was doing something important. But one thing that's been great about the project, it has really grown and it's gotten much bigger and bigger organically, really from the needs and the ideas of the participants that are in it. So at the end of the first year, a number of the young participants said, could you make this a class? Because number one, a lot of times the elder participants are talking about things that we don't know. What is lesbian separatism? You know, are these different things? So could you make it a class? And also it fits in our schedules. So over time now it's become two courses. So the students commit to taking a fall course and a spring course. So it's over a 9-month cycle. And the fall course focuses on LGBTQ history, something that we always ask our students and our elders at the beginning of every year, how many of you have ever learned about LGBTQ history or culture in a school setting? And almost no one raises their hands. Sometimes there'll be one or two young people. And so we really, one of our big points with the curriculum, and we focus on LGBTQ creative expression and art making in the spring. Mm-hmm. One of our big points is that it's very accessible because the elders as well as the youngers are reading, viewing, listening to all these things. So the elders have homework, which, you know, they do. And so then we all come together to talk about these things. So we really made sure too that it's not just prioritizing what's been written right in history. We're listening to things, we're viewing things, we're reading zines and this sort of stuff. We also go each semester to the Gerber Hart Library and Archives, which is the Midwest's largest LGBTQ community archives, and they are really great with us and let us go through their archives. They pull materials for each group's art making. And the other thing we do is we put all of our syllabi and resources online because we want other people to be able to access all those resources as well.
Well, Joni and Holly, what did you two make together?
We did a video project. Yeah. You jump in when I fill in the holes. We decided as a team, and I hope it was a team effort. I mean, talk a lot. And Jay, one of our partners, one of the elders, Jay, I want to give a shout out to Jay and Joelle. Love them so much. We decided to do like a comedy because of what's going on in life today. Especially in our community, it's so painful, the politics behind what's going on today. And I thought, well, let's do something funny. So we decided to do a little sitcom, like a sitcom, and it's called Meet the Pansies / What's in Your Closet. So we were just a family on a regular Friday night having pizza, and then my two sons discovered something in their father's closet. And it turned out to be a magnificent farce, but through it, it's just a magical thing. We put up little closets for each other, and my closet, I was coveting Rihanna, because who wouldn't want to be Rihanna?
Be included.
Say that again.
Rihanna.
You're right. Who wouldn't want to be her, you know? She has a good dental plan, too, so that's good, too. And then Johnny was supposed to be, he decided to do directing instead of having his closet. And even listening to him today, his closet was, Adam stepped in and to be one of my sons. And his closet, he's just all over the place, you know? He can be a queen one day, a Poindexter another day. And then I had one of my sons, Joelle. Joelle says that he's not gay, but yet in his closet, looks like he could be gay, you know? Then Jay's closet was more deeply, I turned out to be a deeper meaning overall. Jay's closet was about transgender people and how their struggles and stuff. So we all decorated our own closets, and people that came to the exhibit, I was just astounded to see so many people just walking around looking and sitting in the chairs and really digesting what we were trying to translate to them. But basically, I just wanted it to be translated. It's a family of love and acceptance. No matter who you are or what you are, you're loved in the Pansy family.
Yeah, I think like as the director, it became this thing for me where I really wanted to capture Holly and Jay's personalities. And that was kind of my main goal, was to, me and Joelle also, I think we both were thinking a lot about how do we kind of do justice to like the amount of energy and like ideas that Holly and Jay are having. Like, you know, like it's so fun and crazy to like work with them. So that became like the thing that I was sort of going for, was like how to structure it in a way that like gives like, like it kind of frames them in this like fun way. And it was a really kinetic process, I think, like where it was like really all over the place. And like trying, it was like, I think for me, like I'm used to maybe it being less insane, like of a, like in a video making environment, but it ended up being really fun. And it was like a really, I think all the time now about like, if I could get Holly to act in something else, or like, because like, she has such a crazy persona she puts on, like super diva, like it's really fun. But that's kind of, yeah, it was a really like fun process for sure.
Well, Holly, you're no stranger to intergenerational relationships, or you're in a queer choir. So
I am in, and let me let you know this: I am Artemis. Lesbian feminist choir.
Tell us about it.
Well, you know what? It's the greatest choir. It's the greatest choir with some of the most wonderful people you'll ever meet. And yes, in the beginning when I joined almost 6 years ago, it was older people. You know, okay, I hate, if they're listening, come on, you are. You know, you're about 40 and up. And then a couple of years ago, it would be 2 years in September, a brash of wonderful, delightful young people just pounded in our choir. And with ideas and talent and beauty and kindness and love. And I tell you something, it's the best thing I do every Thursday night is rehearsing with them. And so we're going to have a concert this Saturday. I'm just going to let you plug that on there. But
okay.
But it's just so wonderful. Like one of our members is coming to mind. Paige helps me out. Paige is about 20. I'm going to go with 21. And Paige is so fluent in music, whereas I'm okay, but I don't read it as well as Paige does. So we had a rehearsal last week, and I was just sitting there, and she didn't show up. And then when she showed up, she said, "I'm here, Holly." And I thought that it should probably be the other way around, but not in our choir. You know, I'm here, Holly. I'm here for you. And that's been the case with every single member of their choir. So it's one of the greatest choirs anyone could ever be in, and I'm just so happy to be a part of it.
Well, before I ask my next question, when and where is this concert?
Thank you.
Plug it. Go ahead.
We're gonna be this Saturday on Federal Street. I can't think of the name of the place, but it's this Saturday.
It's
7 o'clock.
Okay.
And I think it's the ITT campus.
Okay.
And their music hall. And it's at 7 o'clock. And I tell you, if you come, you will not be disappointed.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I don't want to mess up the good mood that we're having over here, but I got to piggyback on something, Holly, you said just about sort of the environment that the community is facing right now with some of the politics and the policies. How are you feeling right now? All three of you, just in, you know, I'm hearing that, you know, some of the challenges that are being faced haven't, you know, probably the worst since the AIDS crisis. So what's going on? So tell us, Holly, first, how are you dealing with some of the changes that are out there and challenges?
Well, first of all, they're trying to erase Black folks, but we're used to that. Bring it on. I mean, if you can go through slavery, you can go through anything. But I think, especially with our community, it's very painful because people want to look at people on labels when you should be looking at people in their soul and their hearts. And I was thinking of the members of our group, especially our transgender people. Man, I wouldn't have it any other way than to have met them and to have them in my life right now. And I don't really even consider them trans anything. I just consider them by their names. sometimes nicknames I give them. Like one of the members in our group is Lizzie, but she doesn't know this, but she's going to know it now. I call her my little baby girl. And she's older like me, but still she's my baby girl. Or Jay, you know, how could you not love these people? So it's painful to see them suffer. And I want to just say, too, that I remember Johnny was having a moment there. And it hurt me to see that he may believe at that moment that his future is not so bright. Mm-hmm. But we're going to fight back. Your future is bright. We will overcome this.
Well, Johnny, tell us about that. How are you feeling about is it something that you're feeling out there that because sometimes young people can be oblivious to what's going on politics wise, but how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty bad about it, probably. I think right now I'm really concerned about my immigrant friends, and I'm really concerned about I volunteer at Hana Center on the north side with Korean immigrants and stuff. And I sort of like, I think for me, I think I've been thinking a lot about, I guess, like intersectionality with other groups of marginalized people, I guess. And it's been pretty, like, I think like it's been pretty like emotional for me to think about, like, I don't know, like, I think like, in this program, for example, like getting to know or realize the similarities between me and people that like I never would have expected there to be similarities between by basis of our like gender identity or our sexuality or something, right? And it makes me like think about like how many people who are out there who I would have a similar connection with who are like, you know, getting rounded up or deported or like, you know, it's, so that's been something for me that's been really weighing on me. But I'm not so like doom and gloom, I guess, but it is really like a hard time to think about a lot of these things, I guess.
Well, Karen Morris, what do you think about what's going on? There's certainly for older queers, there's been other challenges in the past, dealing with AIDS and everything else. How does that compare what's happening now to them?
I'm in an interesting position. The faculty are that we're like middle age, where everybody else is like 65 and older, and the youngers tend to be 19. I'm looking at
That's
Holly.
A huge gap.
19 is 65 to 83 usually are olders, and the youngers tend to be between 20 and 32 or so. Mm-hmm. And then there's those of us in the middle that are watching this. And I think for us watching this, I think we also just watch our community. One thing that's been just for me a huge kind of lifesaver within what's going on in the last year or two is having the project and working with people and seeing that how strong we are together. Because I think everyone's scared. We're all scared, and it's hard to know what to do. It's hard, really hard to know what to do. And one thing that I think has been really important this year in the Dialogue Project in terms of the political context is we always every year talk about LGBTQ activism past and present, but this year especially I think this community, this cohort has become very, very tight, and we've had some really great discussions about what is activism, and it's not just shouting in the streets. Sure. It's so many things.
Sure. Well, unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there, but before we leave I just want to say what's the name of the choir you're part of?
Artemis Lesbian Feminist Choir.
Okay, so the concert's at 7 o'clock, and we found the address. It's at 3125 South Federal Street.
Yay!
7 o'clock Saturday. So
thank you.
Just want to thank our guest, Karen Morris, one of the co-founders of the LGBTQ+ Intergenerational Dialogue Project, and a cultural anthropologist professor at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. We're also joined by two participants, Holly Davis and Joni Pepper Goliens. Thank you to all three of you for being here.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Ari Mejia. It was edited by Dan Tucker. Reset does it all. News, politics, culture, history, and more. To stay connected and get inspired, you can visit us at WBEZ.org or subscribe to the show wherever you listen. I'm Michael Puente, in for Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.